afternoon, Tucson. Welcome to American Warrior. Reading directly from the Army website. The 75th Ranger Regiment is a lethal, agile, and flexible force, capable of executing a myriad of complex joint special operations missions in support of U.S. policies and objectives. Designed and trained to be the most rapidly deployable unit in the Army, capable of conducting operations in all types of terrain and weather using various insertion methods, today's 75th Ranger Regiment is the Army's premier raid force. Get this, each Ranger battalion has the capability of deploying anywhere in the world with 18 hours notice. We're joined today by Marty Scovlin, Jr. Marty is a Ranger. Once a Ranger, always a Ranger, I guess so, huh, Marty?
Yeah, I guess you could say that, but I'd like to give all the credit to the guys that are still taking it to the bad guys.
Well, Marty, such a pleasure to have you here in American Warrior. You served in the Army as a Ranger, I'm guessing, the whole time for 8 years?
No, for 5 out of those 8 years, the last 3 years I was in, I went over to an administrative position. I did, after my fifth deployment, my wife was ready for a break, so I gave her that break.
I can imagine. Now, as a member of the 75th Ranger Regiment, you deployed in support of the global war on terror on 5 different occasions to Iraq and Afghanistan?
Yep, 3 times to Iraq and twice to Afghanistan.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to our chat here. You've got a great book, and I was kind of teasing you as we were doing the prep for the show. I'm one of those rare radio guys that actually reads the book before they have the author on.
Ben, I appreciate it. I really do.
Well, I want to share a little bit about that. Now, I was introduced to you through your website, Havoc Journal, and it was Boz Khan was the name he goes by. He wrote an article called Leadership Lessons from a Recon Marine, and I found it fascinating, contacted your organization. That's how we were able to connect. But I want to just right off the bat tell people, folks, visit HavocJournal.com. Just a great collection of stories and thoughts and opinions. A must read, in my opinion. Now, Marty, Havoc Journal is a kind of a subsidiary of a company called Blackside Concepts. Tell us a little bit about how you got around to, after you started that before you retired from the Army, but tell me a little bit about the company and your inspiration for that.
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting story. It definitely is a company that happened on accident. I planned on staying 20 years in the Army. I liked what I did. After I took that short 3-year break, I was, planned on going back into the special operations community, continuing the fight. It was in 2012, I believe. Yeah, I get my years mixed up, but 2012, just kind of one of those nostalgic nights where I was thinking about my time in battalion and some of the things that I did. And one of the memories that really sticks out to me, and I think about a lot, is on my fourth deployment, I remember being in the ready room in Balad, Iraq, getting ready to go out on another mission that night. And, nothing special happened that night. It was a mission not unlike, 100 before. And I honestly don't even remember what we did that night. But what I do really remember was getting ready in the ready room. And for some reason, it took 4 deployments for this to hit me, but I looked around and it just, like, wow, that I am going out with some of the most lethal, elite, the best our world has to offer. You look around at these guys and they are just the cream of the crop of just the warrior class, specifically, and human beings generally. And it just hit me. And I looked around and kind of just took 5 seconds looking at guys, putting their stuff on, getting ready, going through the motions, and returned to, doing the same myself. But that memory has always really stuck with me. So one night in 2012, I was sitting in my house in New York and decided to, I think I was probably the better part through a 12-pack of beer, to be completely honest, but decided to kind of put pen to paper or fingers to a keypad, to be more accurate, and wrote about that. And I figured it was, by the time I got done with it, I read through it, I was like, maybe some of the guys would think this is kind of cool. So I posted it up on the internet. Before I knew it, it had kind of gone viral, definitely through the Ranger community. And I was getting emails and Facebook messages from guys all over the military about, wow, either I was a Ranger and that took me right back, or I was never a Ranger, but man, that sure brought back the memories. And, getting requested, can you put that on a shirt? Can you put that on a poster or something? And that's kind of what started Blackside Concepts. I didn't really know what to do. I was like, all right, well, yeah, I'm still in the Army. Maybe I can make the car payment each month or something like that. And, and sell a few things. So I started doing a few T-shirts, and before I knew it, that first full year of business had just exploded on me enough to where it pushed me to get out of the military and see where I could really take this thing. And it was at the beginning of this year in 2013 when I found out my wife was pregnant unexpectedly, that we kind of shifted focus from being, you know, kind of another, you know, military-focused T-shirt company to being a multimedia company. I thought that, you know, I have an interest in writing. I have an interest in telling our story and connecting with as many people as possible. Then there's already so many great guys like Article 15, Ranger Up, you know, Scroll Factory, people like that are out there doing the T-shirts already. So we shifted focus, and now that's why we have the different subsidiary companies. We like the Havoc Journal, Hit the Woodline, Blackside Productions, publishing a few different things, and yeah, it's going really well. I'm sorry, that was a very long-winded answer.
No, no worries. Listen, but before we get into it, a little bit teaser. Your book is called Violence of Action. We're going to get into that a little bit more, but just in the brief minute or so we've got left, I tell you, this is the first time I've mentioned Marty, but I like you already because you're probably the third most famous person to ever come out of here in South Dakota behind Hubert Humphrey and Cheryl Ladd. How did a young man from the metropolis of Huron, South Dakota, decide to go into the Army and become a Ranger?
You know what? I think I was one of the, I was teased a little bit in my graduating class about it, and I think I was the only one that went straight into active duty. There was maybe one or two guys that went National Guard, but I was the only one that went active duty straight out of high school, and I don't know, it was just felt like the right thing to do. I come from a family of guys that have served, and you know, there was a war on, so you know, it was time to go get my man dance on.
That's one way to put it. And just so folks understand, Huron is about 13,000 people, but in South Dakota terms, that's a big city. So you're, can I call you a city boy instead of a country boy?
You know, that's what I always explain to people. They you know, anybody that's not from South Dakota calls me a country boy, like I'm in the middle of nowhere. I was like, actually, if you talk to anybody from South Dakota, I'm a city boy. So
yeah, well, I tell you, I've got 8 acres of beautiful land outside of the megapolis of Emory, South Dakota. So, well, I tell you, folks, we're going to take a break. We're going to come right back with Marty Scovlin. We're going to talk about Violence of Action, the untold stories of the 75th Ranger Regiment, some stories you haven't heard, you must hear. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back, folks. This is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. I'm joined by Marty Scovlin, Jr. He is a Army Ranger. He's a CEO, founder of Blackside Concepts. A great website. I want you to visit havocjournal.com. It's a collection of writings by veterans. And Marty, I tell you, one thing I like about Havoc Journal is it's not just veterans, but it's also you've got spouses. You've got some very touching articles by a mother of one of your fellow Rangers who was killed in action. Just a great, great website. I encourage people to visit it. But let's talk about Violence of Action, the untold stories of the 75th Ranger Regiment. Folks, you can find this on Amazon. As I mentioned, I just finished reading the book. Well, it's Marty, it's I guess more of a compilation of stories. I put it this way.
Yeah.
It's an easy read, but it's not easy to read. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it does. It's the whole point with doing a compilation as opposed to me going down and writing a Stephen Ambrose-style book was every layer of person that the story gets told to, it loses something. So from that person telling it to another person to that person writing the notes down and then writing it, you lose something there. And I wanted this book to be as accurate as possibly could be. I'm sorry, I stumble over my words, but the book is, it was meant to be something that would immediately portray what those guys felt in the moment, their emotions, what happened, everything down to, I mean, there's stories in there from everything, what it's like to, you know, jump out of an airplane into, you know, a foreign country that you don't know if it's going to be, you know, you don't know if you're going to be getting shot at in the air under canopy, all the way to what it's like to kill a man, you know, deeply personal things in there. And, you know, we put a few humorous things in there, but the main point was, let's get these guys to tell their own stories. I'll connect them together, polish it up, And then whoever reads this will truly be able to understand from that Ranger's perspective what happened.
Now, Marty, I in reading a review of the book before I bought it, the reviewer said, okay, let's list off the number of books about Army Rangers. And he gets like one, two, you know, pause. And he says, yeah, that's my point. That's why you should read Violence of Action. Was that part of your motivation for compiling this list of stories?
No, I didn't look at the number of books or anything like that. What I did notice, though, was there are so many misconceptions out there about the Ranger Regiment. People really don't understand the level of contribution that Rangers have had to the war on terror. And it's really significant. And I felt that those that needed to be recorded before these guys got too much older. You know, as we get older, memories start to fade a little bit. The details get fuzzy. And so it's kind of a let's get these stories down so that people can understand how much impact the Ranger Regiment had on the war on terror. And it was very significant. So it wasn't about getting more books out there, evening the number with other units and how many books they've put out and things like that. It was more about it's a story that needs to be told, and let's get it told and do it the right way.
Now, Marty, for the civilians listening out there, distinguish for us the Rangers, the Green Berets, and Delta.
Yeah, so the Ranger Regiment, I'll start with them first. They specifically focus on, and their mission has transformed a little bit since 9/11, as many units did, but we have become the go-to special operations direct action raid force. To explain what that means is basically our sole mission in life is to go after high-value targets, the guys that really need to be taken out. They're usually short-duration missions. They're you know, usually carried out at night. We're not doing presence patrols. We're not doing, manning checkpoints and things like that for the most part. And so it's a very specific mission. We can do other things, but that's the bulk of the mission. Special Forces, or a.k.a. the Green Berets, they're kind of known for foreign internal defense and unconventional warfare, meaning, their bread and butter is what they did at the outset of the war in Afghanistan was, you know, they came in, they linked up with the locals, trained and organized them, went into battle with them, and literally overthrew the Taliban, by working by, through, and with the local populace, which is a very special skill set. It's why they focus on, language capabilities and things like that. And then you've got groups like the Navy SEALs who they focus on, the maritime capabilities. They actually do a little bit of everything. We kind of refer to them as jack of all trades. But they definitely can do everything from, beach landings and deploying out of a submarine and things like that. They do a little bit of direct action, and they've also done, a little bit of foreign internal defense for their training. The locals, the indigenous people or the local militaries and that sort of thing. So we all kind of fall into our own little piece of pie. There are the special missions units. I won't go into those too much. The government and the military like to keep them close to the chest. So I'll kind of respect that for them,
sure.
But they do. But they definitely do some very special jobs as well.
Now, we're going to talk a little bit. I'm sure there's sort of a natural competition that goes on amongst the Special Forces and the Rangers and the SEALs and everybody else. And we'll kind of get into what I thought was a very interesting comment in your book about that relationship and how it kind of a defining moment for you. But let's kind of get into this. The book is Violence of Action. To start off, tell us some of the stories that have been related in there. I tell you, the one, I think it was called Skittles, was one that I found interesting. Share that with our listeners, if you would, Marty.
So to kind of set the framework, the book starts in on 9/11 and goes for exactly 10 years after that to September 2011, and we put the stories in chronological order. Skittles happened in 2006, and this was a really interesting story for me personally because 2006 is when I went on my first deployment. When this mission happened, I was also on my first deployment, but I had never heard of this happening, and a MH-47 Chinook helicopter, the big twin, for the non-military viewers, those are the big twin rotor helicopters that are just massive, was actually shot down. These guys really had to slug it out with a superior number of fighters that had surrounded them. And the story Skittles kind of focuses on those more personal moments. And the reason it was actually titled Skittles was because that moment kind of in the lull in the gunfire, where the author of the story you know, pulls out some skills that he had in his pocket and shares it with the guy next to him. And it's just kind of one of those unique things of, wow, you would never think of, you know, for people who've never been in combat, you would never think about, oh, I'm going to sit here and eat some Skittles while I'm returning fire in this intense gunfight and a helicopter just been shot down. And it just was a very unique moment. And so we kind of titled it after that. But, you know, like I said, the helicopter had been shot down. They were outnumbered, and it was really a hairy situation. They were in a bad neighborhood to begin with, and it's just one of those stories that, you know, when I got the submission for the book, I read it, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. Did this actually – I actually called, like, two or three different people, and I was like, did this actually happen? Is this guy, you know, BSing me or what? And, no, it did. So it just is one of those really, really unique stories. And, you know, I think it's stories like that really set this book apart in general.
Well, and I agree with you, and that's why I enjoyed reading it so much is, you know, you teased about it not being Stephen Ambrose. I think that's its strength. I mean, actually reading this in the words of people who are not polished or trained writers, but just Army Rangers sharing their thoughts and their recollections right there from that moment in time. What a great read. Folks, again, I'm joined by Marty Scoveland. He's the founder and CEO of Blackside Concepts, also the author of Violence of Action, The Untold Stories of the 75th Ranger Regiment. Marty, we're going to come back and tell a few more stories, but I was just kind of thinking about it, you know, you being a city boy but from farm country. So is it really true? I mean, can you just give a ranger a knife, some baling wire, and a tin of Copenhagen, and they can do anything they need to do?
Oh, well, you know me, I'm a soft writer now, so I don't know if I've got those skills anymore, but I'd like to think I'd be able to hold my own.
Well, I tell you, based on the book, I think you would. Folks, again, I'd also encourage you to visit havocjournal.com, a great collection of stories. Well, Marty, how often is that updated?
We put out articles every single day. We've got over 20 writers, and it's a consistent stream of content.
Okay. Folks, this is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're joined again by Marty Scoveland, a member, retired member of the elite 75th Ranger Regiment. This group, look them up, folks. We're talking about Afghanistan, Iraq, but they've been everywhere. They're involved in the Black Hawk Down incident. They're involved in Panama. And I've been going all the way back. Rangers trace their history all the way back to the Revolutionary War in between. So a great chat. If you want to talk to Marty, give us a call, 751-1041. We're live in studio today. This is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. Check us out on Facebook, American Warrior Daily Mail. We'll be right back.
Expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back, folks. This is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're joined by Marty Scoveland, Jr. He's a retired Army Ranger, retired as a Staff Sergeant in 2013. Not just an Army Ranger, but with the 75th Ranger Regiment. He's also the founder and CEO of a company named Blackside Concepts. One of the products they offer is a journal called havocjournal.com. Some great stories there, great opinion there. I urge you to visit it. Also, author of Violence of Action. Marty, welcome back. I tell you, one thing that impressed me, there was a line in the book, and I talked about the Ranger Standard, which is excellence in any assigned mission. And, you know, sometimes here on Warrior, we feature, you know, warriors like yourself, but we also like to feature stories of inspiration. And, I mean, just that one phrase, excellent in any assigned mission, what a great tagline.
Yeah, I kind of came up with that because when you're in regiment, it's just called the standard. You're either making the standard or you're not. And, there are, of course, published written standards for serving within the regiment, but that's not usually what people are referring to, you know, at least Rangers anyways, when they say, you know, the standard. And I kind of had to come up with a good way of explaining that, and, you know, excellence in any assigned mission seemed to really fit that well.
And I also encourage people, I won't read the whole thing here, but the Ranger Creed, folks, look it up. I mean, this is just such a great read. Never shall I fail my comrades. I will always keep myself mentally alert, physically strong, and morally straight. I will shoulder more than my share of the task, whatever it may be, 100%, and then some. I mean, yeah, I was kind of teasing you about you send a ranger out with a knife and baling wire and Copenhagen, then get the job done. But really, well, you know, what a great fighting force there. What, there's a reference in the book, though, you talk about, or so one of the authors talks about a point in the war on terror where every Ranger had his own equipment, his own custom rifle, his own night vision goggles, all the stuff they needed to do their job. And I got to tell you, Marty, my first reaction as a civilian was, what? It wasn't always that way? What?
Yeah, you know, so one of the themes in the book is talking about that transformation that the regiment went through during this time. It was a very transformative period. Prior to 9/11, it was a very SOP-driven unit and SOP standard operating procedure. Everybody would have everything the same, depending on their job, of course. But it was very much a dress-right-dress sort of environment. As we got more into the war on terror, they started to see that what works for me may not necessarily work for him, and we need to give the guys some leeway, and it became more and more so that way. Now, it didn't turn into an absolute free-for-all where guys were, you know, hey, I want to wear a T-shirt and jeans out on mission tonight or something like that. It wasn't like that. There are units that have pulled that, by the way. But we didn't go that far down the rabbit hole. But it definitely, the regiment turned into something where, and this is one of the, just a very unique thing with the regiment, is they're so flexible in their mindset. They never say, well, this is the way this is, it's always been done. The focus is always, what is the best way to do the job so we can do this mission and do it better than anybody else? And if that means, you know, getting the guys the right equipment and when you're walking through the mountains of Afghanistan, you know, the boot that works for you may not necessarily work for me and that sort of thing.
Well, I can tell you, as a business person myself, I was shocked that there wasn't always that flexibility. But, you know, just one of the snippets that I pulled out of the book there, one other thing I'd like to quote again from the Ranger Creed. Energetically, I will meet the enemies of my country. I shall defeat them on the field of battle, for I am better trained and will fight with all of my might. Surrender is not a Ranger word. I will never leave a fallen comrade to fall into the hands of the enemy. Under no circumstances will I ever embarrass my country. You had a reference in the book to a situation on a mission you were involved with some Navy SEALs. And I think both the Rangers and the SEALs lost personnel in that mission. And you talked about how that sort of changed your viewpoint or maybe some pre-established ideas you had about the Navy SEALs.
I actually was not on that mission,
okay.
But they were from my unit. That actually happened right after I had left. After I'd left the Ranger Regiment. Of course there is a little bit of rivalry between, the Army and the Navy, of course, and we had the Army-Navy football game.
Yeah, sorry.
That was on full display. It gets even more so when you talk about SEALs and Rangers. And, we typically worked with, SEALs at that elite level of, you know, the guys that, you know, took down Bin Laden and that sort of stuff. That's who this story was referencing. And, we've had a very touch and go relationship with them, I think, at least at the tactical level. I don't want to speak for the regiment as a whole or anything like that, but at the tactical level, it's been touch and go over the years. And it was very unique, with that platoon that, basically replace some of their operators, person by person, to make them mission capable and go out and get stuff done. And they really, you know, the story starts off where they're very, you know, we're in our tent, you're in your tent sort of thing, and we just mind each other's own businesses, and then we go out on mission. But, you know, as they worked more together, they started to grow together more, you know, trade some jokes, that sort of thing. And then that mission happened where both one of the SEAL operators as well as one of the Rangers were killed in action. And that was, you know, obviously just heartbreaking for everybody involved and really brought them together. And it also produced the only Ranger to earn a Distinguished Service Cross out of the War on Terror, that same mission. So it really was a unique story, and it's one of the few stories I think that are out there where another Ranger will say kind words about his fellow SEAL operators. So it definitely was a very unique story, and I was happy to have it, especially since it told the story of, you know, somebody I knew, the mission that they were, you know, gave their life on. And, yeah.
Now, Marty, we've had Navy SEALs on American Warrior before. We've had Green Berets on. We've had lots of folks.
Yeah.
There's a couple of your authors in the book that talk about specifically the Jessica Lynch rescue operation. We've had a Navy SEAL, a local guy here, who was in part of that team that went in to get Jessica Lynch out. He literally was one of the guys that carried her down the stairs. But I tell you what struck me about, well, two things. One is sometimes the best mission is a mission where you never fire a shot, I would guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's the majority of missions.
But also there is some very powerful and disturbing imagery of something that the Rangers had to go through on that mission when they discovered or they were told about the remains of some of the other personnel on that mission. Now, it's a family show, but kind of relate to us that situation for us.
So this is, I think, one of the most powerful stories in the book. It just, man, if you don't read this and just walk away with, you know, holding your breath, I don't know. it was, I had known that this had happened before, but it wasn't until I put this book together that I knew the grisly details of it. And so basically what happened is when they went in to go rescue Jessica Lynch, they obviously, she was in the hospital, they got her out. But she wasn't the only person that was captured when her convoy came under fire. So they found out that the rest of her, you know, brothers and sisters in arms were buried in a field outside of the hospital. And, you know, true to the, you know, never leave a fallen comrade behind. And it was kind of like, well, let's go get them. And, you know, these guys weren't prepared for this. They didn't know this going in. They didn't bring shovels with them or anything like that. So it was literally go out there. They pushed the youngest guys in the unit out full security, mm-hmm. you know, hoping to kind of spare them from it, which I thought was just an incredible act of leadership. And they got down and on hands and knees and dug them out by their hands. You know, again, like you said, family show, I won't go into the grisly details, but you can imagine what that was like for these guys. This was just terrible. You know, Yeah. It's hard for me to put into words, and I wasn't even there. The fact that these guys who were there were able to put it into words and to include in this book is just awe-inspiring to me. But it was just a great example of leadership on their part, as well as that willingness to, you know, complete the mission no matter what.
And
even if it means getting down on your hands and knees.
Right, and I agree with you. I think that example of the non-commissioned leaders telling the younger guys, hey, you go, you know, go do security while we take care of this. That, you're right. That's, folks, get the book, read it. It's called Violence of Action, The Untold Stories of the 75th Ranger Regiment. We've got Marty, one of the authors, the lead author, I guess we'll call you, Marty, here on American Warrior. You still got some time. Give us a call, 751-1041. We'll be right back with Marty Scoveland Jr. and talk a little bit more about his experiences and his publications.
My daddy served in the Army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard. Till the day that he died, he wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free.
If you want to discuss those who serve the red, white, and blue, dial 520-751-1041. If you want to support them, start with WoundedWarriorProject.org. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back, folks. What a great show. We're joined by Marty Scoveland Jr., a retired Army Ranger with the 75th Ranger Regiment. Also one of the chief editors and writers for a, I don't know if you'd call it a blog, Marty. What would you call Havoc Journal?
It's an online publication. I kind of like to avoid the word blog, too. I think we've grown beyond that this point.
Very well put, sir. You're absolutely right. Folks, visit HavocJournal.com. You can also find them on Facebook, The Havoc Journal. Now, Marty, I just want to make it clear, given that you are always an Army Ranger, the only reason we played that Navy commercial is because of yesterday. So we good?
Oh, no,
we're still
no.
Friends? We're all right?
No problem at all. It's always in good nature, and, you know, the ribbing between the, you know, the inner circles rivalry, it's always in good nature. And, you know, the honest truth is after the jokes are told, we all have an incredible amount of respect for each other. So very good friends with some Navy counterparts, even some Navy SEALs.
even some Navy SEALs.
Yeah, and you know, they're great guys, and you know, we're very lucky to have men like this that you know, have put on or still do put on a uniform for our country.
Well, I tell you, if you ever get to Tucson, visit Trident Grill. You'll best clam chowder in town, and I think you'll probably see some folks in the corner booth somewhere. You might recognize their bearings. So, Marty,
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, you can endorse them. They're an advertiser. It's not
No. I was just going to say I'm a big clam chowder fan. Growing up in South Dakota, I was not exposed to that, but my wife is from Massachusetts, so, you know, clam chowder up there is like, you know, corn on the cob in South Dakota.
Yeah.
So I've come to really appreciate that. I'll have to check it out if I ever get down there.
Well, and that's sort of an inside joke. You know, South Dakota is one of those few states where a salad doesn't necessarily have to include vegetables or lettuce. Right. So, yeah. Marty, coming back again, I encourage folks to visit havocjournal.com. Part of the reason I enjoy it, very insightful writing, but also I enjoy, as a civilian, I enjoy the perspective that you add from the spouses of folks in the military. And in one case in particular, a mother who also has a chapter or two in the book talking about her experiences and her feelings upon losing her son, who was killed in action. One of the other touching references in the book, I think it's one that you wrote about, Staff Sergeant Anthony Cookie Dennis. Am I correcting that correctly?
Davis.
Davis.
Anthony Davis. Yep.
And it basically describing the moment, kind of the first realization of mortality. And it struck me, I saw an interview by a member of the 75th Ranger Regiment who was involved in Black Hawk Down, and he described a moment where he saw a Delta operator was killed, dropped right next to him. And he said, in that moment, I realized it was quite likely that I was going to die today, but I was not going to let the man next to me be killed. And what a powerful statement about the camaraderie, but also sort of that realization of mortality. You guys are in a dangerous business.
Yeah, that passage that you're talking about, that was at his memorial service after we had returned from that deployment that he was killed on, and it's something that will, I think I remember it as if it happened yesterday. But that was the first memorial service that I had gone to for one of our own Rangers. We had, in 1st Battalion, where I was at, we had three Rangers killed on Hawker Guard during Operation Anaconda and the rescue attempt of Neil Roberts, which is, you know, very widely publicized as Roberts Ridge, and that's the thing. We had those three Rangers from 175 killed in 2002, and it wasn't until Staff Sergeant Davis was killed in 2009 that we experienced our next killed in action. So for the entire time that I had been there, I had never, you know, seen one of our own fellow Rangers. And in the case of Staff Sergeant Davis, I wasn't personal friends with him. He was quite senior to me, but I had worked with him on a regular basis, definitely, you know, had talked to him and that sort of thing. And sitting at that memorial, and they have this thing that they do at the end where the sergeant major of the battalion will get up and he'll do a roll call. He'll call out two Rangers' names. Those Rangers in the formation will respond with, you know, here's Sergeant Major present, something along those lines. And then he'll call out the fallen's name, Staff Sergeant Davis.
Mm-hmm.
No answer. You know, Staff Sergeant Anthony Davis, no answer. And at this point, you know, you hear the sniffles in the formation and that sort of thing. It is so freaking powerful. And then, you know, finally one more time, Staff Sergeant Anthony Cookie Davis. And then usually the person who was closest to him or within, worked with him regularly or whatever, in this case it was my good friend Noah, you know, responded back from within the formation, Sergeant Major, Staff Sergeant Anthony Cookie Davis is no longer with us.
Wow.
And it just is the most powerful thing that you've ever felt before, where you're sitting here and listening to the Sergeant Major of the battalion, you know, basically scream at the top of his lungs for a man that is no longer with us. And it just, I get chills just thinking about it right now. It was a very, very powerful moment.
Right.
Unfortunately, that wasn't the last memorial service that I went to, but it was my first, and because of it being my first, it definitely sticks out to me.
Well, Marty, I've got to share, I've been present at some of those memorials, and I mean I'm getting choked up just thinking about it right now. That is a very rough moment when they call that name and there's no response. If you're willing, sir, if you could share a little bit about one of the Rangers lost in the global war on terror was a Tucsonan, is a Tucsonan. Sergeant
yes.
Martin Lugo, who was killed August 19th in Afghanistan. Did you know Mr. Lugo?
Yeah, he was actually my senior private when I first showed up to 1st Ranger Battalion. Went on my very first run in Ranger Battalion with him. I still remember to this day. I just got there, and you know, your first day when you first show up as a brand new guy, it's pretty rough. And I had just kind of been released for the day, was changing out of my uniform and getting into feeling close, thinking, okay, I made it through the first day. And then I get a knock on my door, and you just instantly, your heart sinks into your gut, like, oh, geez, what now? You know, what's going to happen next? And I open the door, and there's Lugo. And I remember he, at that point, you know, he wasn't an NCO yet or anything like that, but he was senior to me. So it was still one of those things where I very much respected him. And I, like I said, I had just shown up 6 hours prior. And so I open up the door, and he's standing there. He goes, hey, man, my name's Lugo. Let's go for a run. And so I'm like, oh, geez, I'm exhausted at this point, but I put on my shorts back on again and that sort of thing. We walk out, and he takes me for my first run around Hunter. And that's one of those things that I think about a lot. And, you know, we served in the same company for, you know, all the way. He was still there even after I left, which is when he was killed on his last mitt, on that last deployment in 2010. But, no, he was one of those guys where, you know, I'll share another story. I remember one day, I don't remember what year it was. It was years later, but, he was a senior team leader in 1st Platoon Charlie Company and, was in charge of the squad for that day. And I remember walking out to lunch and, you know, typically you do PT, you know, workout in the morning before you start the work day. Which I'm sure they probably did, but that day I was walking out to go to lunch to go get a sandwich somewhere, and I remember seeing there was Lugo in old kit, you know, all of his plates and everything like that, just taking off at a sprint outside on the road next to our compound building with his squad and trail, you know, at noon during the lunch hour to go, you know, PT his guys instead of going and getting lunch. And, you know, this is noon in Savannah, Georgia, by the way. It's not exactly nice and cool at that time of day. So, you know, and I remember thinking, I was like, man, that is just one heck of an NCO. That is one heck of a leader. And that's who he was. And he was a great friend and to everybody who knew him. And he was an excellent Ranger NCO. And it was a real blow to not just 1st Platoon, not just Charlie Company, not just 1st Ranger Battalion, but I really think the regiment and the Army when he was killed in action.
Well, Marty, thanks for sharing that. I don't know if his family is listening here, but I really appreciate you taking the time to share those personal stories about Sergeant Lugo. It's always hard when you lose someone, but as you can imagine, not quite as small as here on South Dakota, but Tucson's a pretty small town. It really strikes deep here when we lose someone. So let's getting a little dark here. Let's step. I tell you what, I was trying to learn something, and one thing I learned from your book was there is actually a secret squirrel patch. End for us. We've got about a minute. End for us the story about securing your computer and the importance of that.
Oh, yeah. So one of the co-authors with the book, who was he's a lieutenant colonel and was in charge of a lot of the military intelligence for special operations at the time, had gotten a new Navy augmentee and for the intelligence section, and she showed up wearing a secret squirrel patch, which is very taboo in the special operations. It's kind of something that's laughed at because the patches are actually made. They're not sanctioned by the military or anything like that. They're just one of those fun things that you can buy. And yeah, so I guess she showed up wearing that and, you know, it was a very bad first impression. And as far as the computers go, you know, you have to log into computers using your ID card and keeping, you know, that's for a reason. So leaving your ID card in the computer is obviously completely against regulation. You can actually get in quite a bit of trouble for it. But generally what will happen is somebody will log in and send out an email blast to everybody that's extremely embarrassing for you, and that's exactly what happened.
Wonderful. Marty, hey, thank you for your service. Rangers lead the way. You're leading the way. Violence of Action, folks, buy the book, look it up. Visit havocjournal.com. Marty, thank you for your service. Thanks for appearing on American Warrior. I'd love to develop a relationship with some of your authors and have you back on a regular basis.
Absolutely. I loved coming on. Thanks for having me on, and hopefully I'll be back on and we can get a few of the other writers on as well.
It's a date. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
Yep. Bye.
We'll be right back with Daily Mail, folks. This has been your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. If you'd like to hear podcasts of our show, visit 1041kqth.com. We'll be right back after this commercial break.